funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How often do you tell lies? And should some kinds of deception be accepted as acts of mercy or tools for conflict avoidance? Or are we simply lying to ourselves when we justify so-called white lies? My guest today believes the world could be a much better place if we would all simply stop telling lies, big ones, small ones, and everything in between. And he's just published an elegant little book in defense of those ideas. Sam Harris is a neuroscientist, co-founder and CEO of Project Reason, and author of the new book, Lying. Sam, welcome to Think.
Thank you, Chris. Pleasure to be here.
You call lying the royal road to chaos. Why are the consequences so often worse than the outcomes we lie in order to try and prevent?
Well, when you look at what a lie is, it really is a simultaneous failure of trust and trustworthiness. It's an unwillingness to collaborate with people. It's an unwillingness to give people the information you would want to have if you were in their shoes. So it's a true betrayal of friendship. And I mean, though, as you say, there this category of lies where we seem to justify them based on some notion of compassion, where we think we're doing someone a favor by misleading them. But for the most part, what you see around you, you know, in your personal life or in the news or in literature, I mean, the examples of lives that unravel, it's always lying that is at the root of it. It's just people get themselves into situations which would be impossible to manufacture but for the fact that they are willing to deceive the people closest to them and the public. And I mean, it's just when you look at how careers flame out, Lance Armstrong comes to mind. I mean, it's not so much the infraction itself, it's the willingness to lie year after year in his case and really to destroy the lives of others in order to maintain a lie that it becomes so bizarre and sociopathic and dysfunctional. I mean, when taken to that kind of extreme.
What do you consider a lie for purposes of this discussion?
Well, a lie is when we intentionally cause others to form beliefs that we know to be untrue. So it's possible, therefore, to lie with the truth. You know, the literal truth. Parsed exquisitely in a Clintonian sense, can still be a lie because you know what the effect of a truth in that context will cause others to form erroneous beliefs. So, you know, one example I give in my book is I could be standing on the sidewalk in front of the White House with my cell phone, and I could call you know, the headquarters of Facebook and say, "Hi, this is Sam Harris. I'm calling from the White House. I'd like to speak to Mark Zuckerberg." Well, yeah, this is Sam Harris, and I'm calling from the White House. That's true, but I know that my words in that case are crafted to form a false impression. I don't actually work for the White House. I just happen to be in front of it on the sidewalk. It's when you're misleading people in a context where they would otherwise expect honest communication. So this leaves out poker players and stage magicians and other people who deceive us when we expect to be deceived, mm-hmm. and that's part of the game.
And you also acknowledge that there are times when we can understand that people are looking to us for something different than what their questions suggest. So if a colleague passes me in the hall and says, "Hey, how are you, Chris?" and she doesn't want to hear that I slept badly and I had a flat tire this morning.
Right, right. Well, yeah, there are categories of speech where the words themselves are kind of distractor, where the subtext really carries most of the meaning. And in that case, we understand, except for in certain relationships, we understand a statement, a question like, "How are you?" as a kind of greeting as opposed to a real question, as the text would suggest. But, there are many cases where you don't have to download all truths that are available to your consciousness in every moment. First of all, it would be impossible, because it's just there's just too much to say about everything. So we're constantly editing, even when we have a commitment to tell the truth to people. We have to select certain truths to state and others to ignore, and that's fine. And I'm not advocating that we, in the manner of someone with, you know, Tourette syndrome, just helplessly broadcast our thoughts and judgments, regardless of their consequences. So keeping a secret is also different from a lie. So, for instance, you could ask me how much money I have in my bank account. The truth would be I don't want to tell you and our listeners. So I don't have to lie in order to keep that secret. I can just say I don't feel like talking about it. So it's not the same thing as being totally transparent on all topics to everyone all the time.
Interestingly, though, asking another person to keep your secret might, in fact, put them in a position of having to lie.
Yeah. I think keeping secrets in general is a bad idea. But there's a difference between keeping a secret and just not wanting to disclose certain information. So to keep a secret often entails, especially if you're keeping a secret for someone else, it often entails having to conceal the fact that you are holding that information. So if you ask me how much money I have in my bank account, I can say I don't want to talk about it. I'm keeping the information secret, but the fact that I'm keeping it secret is not a secret. So, but if someone tells me, he's cheating on his wife, but please don't tell anyone about it, now I have to walk around pretending that I don't have this information, and I have to pretend in the presence of his wife, and these are difficult and relationship distorting situations, because you just can't be authentic and honest. You never know. This is the problem with lying in general. You never know how reality is going to put pressure on you to divulge the truth, because only the truth squares with all the moment-to-moment changes in the world and in human behavior that occur. And a lie is this brittle thing that you have to maintain in opposition to reality. So you have to remember what you said to people, because you have to keep your story straight. When you tell the truth to people, you don't have to remember anything. You just have to keep telling the truth. And if it turns out what you said was not exactly accurate, well, then you can own up to the error. But reality itself becomes your memory bank. You just keep pointing people back to the world and to what's actually going on, whereas a lie really has to be crafted and maintained, and it really haunts your future, because you never know what is going to reveal the fact that you have been misleading others.
Yeah, and there's never just one lie.
Right, and so it becomes this massive commitment to the past, in a sense, and it's one that. By definition, distorts relationships. I mean, you're spending time not connecting to people. You're spending time hiding your true face, and this is why lies enable the other kinds of distortions of people's lives that are so harmful. So, you know, if you're an addict, the way you manage to maintain your addiction for any amount of time is by lying about it. If you didn't give yourself the mechanism of deceiving people, well, then it's almost impossible to let your life fully run off the rails, because people ask you what's going on and they immediately find out, and you have to have those conversations, and people can try to help you and they intervene. But if you're lying to everyone, well, then you can go very deep into a dark hole for a very long time before even the closest people to you find out about it.
Sometimes, Sam, we're put in a position where it would appear that someone that we care about wants us to lie back to them. And, of course, there's the classic question, like, do I look fat in this dress?
Right. Yeah, well, so one thing that begins to happen is, well, once you're committed to telling the truth, the people in your life notice this, and they become... Sometimes we start training the people closest to us to understand that if they really want our opinion, that they should ask, and they're going to get it. And if they don't actually want our opinion, they shouldn't ask. And that's a much, in my view, a much healthier and more adult relationship to have with people. So if you're the kind of person who asks people what they think of your work, but really only wants to hear the praise and does not want critical feedback, well, then you don't actually have an adult relationship to the people in your life or to the very act of being a creative person in the world. I mean, either you want to know what people think about your work because your goal is to communicate successfully, or you don't. And if you don't, well, then you're going to collide with reality, and you can only protect yourself so much from the opinions of others. But in my view, we really do our friends no favors by giving them false praise or concealing our opinions when they ask for them, because we're sending them out into the world without a perspective that we think is valid. So, if, you know, one example I give in the book is a friend who is a very successful screenwriter, was just starting out. He wrote a screenplay, and he asked me what I thought of it. And I thought it was a terrible screenplay. There was no way he was going to succeed as a screenwriter on the basis of this kind of work. So in so many words, I told him that. I told him what I would want to know if I were him, spending months and now years laboring on this craft. And it was a hard conversation to have, but it was very useful to him, and he's gone on to be a very successful screenwriter. And that the net result, however, is he knows that when I say I love something he wrote, he absolutely knows I'm telling the truth, because he's had the other conversation with me. And that's exactly the kind of friend and critic I would want in my life, and those are the kinds of people I have in my life, and my work is better for it, and I'm a better person for it. And it's a strange preference, and not an adult one, to only want to hear the praise from the people closest to you.
In some ways, it's almost a brilliant weed-out tool. If there are people in your life that appear to want what amounts to a dishonest relationship because it is dependent upon you telling them only what they want to hear, at some point you have to realize it's not going to work out for you to be friends.
Yeah, it's also just not a real friendship. I mean, it can be a pleasant relationship as far as it goes, but it doesn't go all that far, and you're not going to learn a lot from this person, and they're unwilling to learn a lot from you, and so it's a limitation which is just fundamentally uninteresting in relationship. Now, it's not to say that we don't find ourselves in superficial relationships where we are better served by just avoiding certain topics or avoiding indelicate conversations, and so there is room for tact and just cutting your losses with people. So I'm not saying that you just have to steamroll to every uncomfortable truth and disclosure that's possible in every encounter with every person. But there are certain people who you just can't talk to about things that matter, and those are not your closest friends, presumably.
One thing that's amazing is how often people tend to lie without even realizing. Like, if you ask them how many lies they told that day, I think most people would say zero, and yet you sort of go back to multiple interactions, and we sometimes can do this without even noticing we've lied.
Yeah. And what many people do is they essentially keep two sets of books, ethically speaking. They have two ethical codes, the one they have with the people closest to them, and the one they have with the rest of the world, with mechanics and employees and other people who they meet in their daily business of going through the world. And what you find is that people are quite willing to lie to these in these other transactions, where they're presuming that they're really not in relationship with this person. They're just trying to smoothest and usually most self-serving way get their business done, but it's a strange effect to see people who you're close with lie without any hesitation in their other relationships. Because
let me jump in. Sorry, we have to take a quick break. My guest is Sam Harris. His new book is called Lying. Our number is 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Classes are available in everything from fine arts to financial planning. Spring registration is open now. You can learn more and register online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with neuroscientist Sam Harris. He is co-founder and CEO of Project Reason and author of the new book, Lying. If you'd like to join us, the number is 1-800-933-5372. The email address is think@kera.org. You were saying, Sam, before the break, that if you see someone you know telling a lie, it causes you to question whether you can ever trust anything they say to you.
Yeah. And there, I was also speaking about the fact that people tend to have two sets of ethical code for the people closest to them and then for the rest of the world. And one thing that's interesting is that occasionally those ethical codes are forced into conjunction with one another. So, for instance, let's say you own a store and you often lie to your customers, or at least shade the truth in a way that you wouldn't with a close friend. Well, so then you can find yourself lying to a customer only to discover that this customer is in fact, you know, your close friend's sister or the girlfriend of a close friend or somebody who now suddenly is now in the inner circle of your moral concern. And occasionally we find ourselves stumbling into situations like that where I've been in a store where someone is giving me the ordinary sales job, but then they discover that we actually have some real social connection that demands a different kind of conversation. And then I notice that the conversation drops down a level to a level of honesty which wasn't present there, you know, where they'll say, oh, you know, actually, you know, don't buy this one. It's probably not, you know, worth the money. Buy this other model. But this was information that they were not going to disclose a moment before. And it says something really unflattering about the person. The person is just, in fact, less trustworthy. And these kind of erosions of trust happen in both directions and in many different kinds of relationships. So there's one story in the book which I found fascinating. I had readers send in stories about lies that they had noticed in their lives that they found damaging. And one very subtle one came in where a friend was in the presence of two girlfriends together, and one was talking about how she had plans later that night that she didn't feel like fulfilling. So she just kind of jumped on her cell phone and left a message for this other friend, this third friend, canceling her plans for that night. And she just said, she just made up a reason. She said, you know, her kids were sick, or something that was that the first friend knew to be false. And so you have a friend listening to another friend leave a voicemail message, canceling plans in a way that now has subtly eroded her trust, because she now wonders whether how many times she's been on the receiving end of that kind of lie. And what's most insidious about it is that this never gets corrected, because she didn't admonish her friend about her ethics. She didn't say, why did you lie to this third friend, because it didn't seem worth it, and it wasn't the kind of relationship that demanded that they go to the mat on that particular topic. So it was just a subtle breach of trust that she observed that now subtly tainted their relationship thereafter. And this, if you pay attention to it, this kind of thing happens over and over again.
I have to confess, the kinds of lies that I am most often astonished by are those that are told casually sometimes by parents to their children. And, you know, we've all seen this, like instead of telling your child, we're not going to the park because I've had a long day already and I just don't feel like taking you, people will say, oh, the park is closed. And I always wonder about that, because then the same people are really shocked when their kids lie to them a few years down the road.
Yeah, people seem to think that lying to children is some necessary tool in the toolbox that we need to keep them safe and keep them free from you know the terrors of the world. It's just not true. I mean, I now have two daughters, and I am never in the circumstance where I feel the need to lie to them. I mean, there are obviously truths that you don't want to disclose, or that in disclosing them you do it in a way that is sensitive to the limits of what a child can handle. So, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of scary things in the world that my daughters have never heard about because they're just too young to deal with the information. But I'm not constantly finding myself in a situation where I have to lie to conceal that information. You just shape it in a way. You give the truth in a way that a child at that age can handle. But What's amazing is that people think that lies, for instance, like lying about Santa Claus for Christmas, is incredibly important, and so much of the magic and mystery of and pleasure of childhood would be eroded if you fail to tell this lie every year. But strangely, we don't feel this way on any other topic. We don't feel like we have to lie to our kids about Harry Potter or Middle Earth or Batman or anything else. We don't tell our kids these things are true and factual. And we know every other day of the year that kids find fiction and art immensely meaningful and rewarding and captivating. And people don't see notice the cost of successfully lying to their kids year after year, and then their kids eventually find out. I mean, how grateful is the last kid in class who believes in Santa Claus for these illusions? You know, I mean, who wants to be that last kid in class who's now getting a lesson in epistemology meted out by other six-year-olds? It's just, and I've heard from many people who remember feeling quite betrayed and harmed to realize that the people closest to them had been lying to them successfully year after year. I mean, they remember it as a six-year-old or as a seven-year-old finding out that their parents had been lying to them, and it was not a good thing. So I think it's, you know, I think even the Santa myth should be taught as a myth and a fun one, and it's no less fun. I mean, my daughters love Christmas and they don't believe in Santa, and I was never tempted to lie about it. But no one's tempted to lie about Halloween or Thanksgiving or anything other holiday that kids find fun.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go on the phone now to Robert in Rowlett. Hi, Robert.
Hey, I really think this show is interesting. I instruct people on how to ride horses, and one of the things that I'll ask them is, have you ever ridden before? And most commonly they'll say, oh, I've ridden horses, and when it's obvious they haven't. And at first I thought they were, you know, lying for a reason, but then what I think happens is they have a projection in their mind that they've done things before they show up to do them, and so they've kind of convinced themselves that, well, I've been close to it, and I've done this activity. But with children, the reason my question was, with children, if I ask them, did you put this thing back where, you know, I told you, or, you know, did you do a certain activity, and they lie, how do you confront them without it turning into a thing where you're like, I obviously saw you didn't do it, or, you know, and you take them to task for it? Is it pathological in a child to start developing this pattern of lying?
Yeah, well, children begin to lie somewhere around the age of four, and it is just a natural phenomenon. I mean, we're in some basic sense evolved to lie, and it's not. I mean, we're evolved to do many things that we now recognize to be socially maladaptive. That's not to say they weren't adaptive in the state of nature. So if you can deceive your enemies, and in certain situations even deceive yourself, it's easy to see how that could have paid evolutionary dividends going back tens and hundreds of thousands of years. It's natural to see kids begin to experiment with lying. It comes at the moment where they appreciate that people have different sets of beliefs and different perspectives, and that it's possible to sort of triangulate put false beliefs into the minds of others. But I think, you know, it may not be your place as a teacher to forcefully discourage deception. It may be the place of the parent, depending on the age of the child and the relationship. But I think it's good to discourage lying as early as possible, because we want our kids to be in contact with the way the world is. We want them to value honesty and integrity, and lying to them and encouraging them to lie to others or failing to discourage it is clearly not the way to engender that kind of social and emotional growth.
When you decided as a young man that you would try your very best to live your life without lying on a regular basis, did it take some time to get out of the habit of telling small lies, the kind that we tell ourselves or that we put out there to spare people's feelings, for example?
Well, I actually took a course, which I describe briefly in the book, at Stanford in my freshman year. There was a professor who's actually still there, Ronald Howard, who taught a course just on the ethics of lying. And it was just a single question that animated the course: is it ever acceptable to lie? And the course was just, it was like a machine for creating people who were really committed to being honest in their lives, regardless of the relationship, but honest to strangers and honest to friends. And so that happened when I was 18, and I really don't remember what I was like before I took that course. I don't remember what sort of commitment I had to honesty, but it was almost like a firmware upgrade of my brain. Hmm. It was one of the clearest instances in my life where philosophical reflection and the Socratic method of just talking through an ethical problem radically transformed my behavior and my emotional life, and it came as such a relief. I remember the feeling of relief when I suddenly saw the mad work that was being done in the lives of others by lies, and just the way in which people were, cheating on their spouses or destroying their reputations based on this facility for lying. And the moment you decide you're not going to lie to people, you rule out all of those possibilities. I mean, my wife absolutely knows that I'm never going to cheat on her because I'm not going to lie to her. I can't lie to her. And I know it as well. I mean, so it's like the marital infidelity is just not on the menu. Or if it is, it's synonymous with the end of the marriage. I mean, it's, if I cheated on her, I would tell her, and then we would have that all the fallout of that transgression. So the fact that lying is not possible rules out these hugely distorting detours in a person's life. And I remember at 18 just realizing that and seeing these bombs going off in other people's lives that were entirely the product of the lies they had told to people. And it's a tremendous relief once you begin to live with this kind of commitment to being honest and knowing that whatever the situation is, you're actually just going to speak honestly. You don't have to calculate in advance how you're going to create a facade so as to avoid unpleasant truths.
And sometimes it is simpler than people might realize. We should make the point here, if it's not already clear, that you don't go around sort of wantonly offering truthful assessments where they're not solicited. But if you had to thank a friend for a gift you really didn't care for, there are ways to speak honestly about the gesture without saying you like what you can't stand.
Yeah, exactly. And this comes down to the challenge of getting in touch with what the truth actually is, because there are many truths in a situation. So the truth on the occasion of receiving a gift that you don't actually like, the truth isn't just that you don't like the sweater. The truth is also that you are touched and appreciative of the fact that this friend took the time to buy you a gift. So you can be. You're still on the same team with this person, even though you don't like the sweater, and even though you're not going to wear the sweater. What you get by being honest and remaining connected to the person is, one, you remove the paranoia of now you have to sort of pretend to like it and at some point wear it, and if the person doesn't see you wearing it, then you have to have further conversations about it. And you also get the consequences of your honesty are the person knows that you really like something when you really like it, and that is, people are not noticing that is a kind of resource that they're discarding every time they pretend to like something that they don't really like. And it's just a, again, it's a relief. And this is one thing that happens. It's true that you encounter certain awkward moments and certain things that you feel like you wish you had finessed better. In addition, what you get is just this massive relief to find yourself in the presence of people who you know are saying what they actually believe, and you see that relief in others in your presence, and it actually just deepens friendships, it's as simple as that. It deepens trust, and it deepens trustworthiness, and it becomes obvious to people, and it becomes obvious to people who don't share your commitment to honesty. Those people become improved by your commitment to honesty because they become embarrassed by their own double dealing in the world in your presence, and it's a very interesting process to see play out in one's relationships.
Do you think those same individuals are more honest with you, even if they might lie to others?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you can just see it because they see examples of your honesty, they become squeamish about their own two-facedness when you're around, and it is interesting to see. It really does. It becomes kind of an obvious process of social pressure that is tending in the direction of more honesty.
We're speaking this hour with neuroscientist Sam Harris. He is co-founder and CEO of Project Reason, and he has a new book out called Lying. If you'd like to join us, call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Classes are available in everything from fine arts to financial planning. Spring registration is open now. You can learn more and register online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Sam Harris about his new book, Lying. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. Let's go to the phones now and speak with Linda in Flower Mound. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Oh, well, I'm a breastfeeding advocate, and I feel like that's a topic that some people, you know, they get asked about, and they want to say it's none of your business, but it's by a close family member or someone who obviously feels it is their business because they're asking the question. And we say a lot, you know, lie by omission. And maybe we don't use the word lie, but we say be selective in the information you provide. And I was just wondering if there are other topics, you know, you sort of touched upon it with money, but maybe, you know, society, but what sort of, yeah, how do you feel about that situation? And you think our people are better off just always giving all the, you know, busting out their health information about why breastfeeding is better, or whether, you know, if they know their mother-in-law is going to fight them, just saying they're, you know, deflecting or being judicious about what they information they provide.
What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, well, I think when information matters, when it actually has an effect on the well-being of others, and where misinformation or a failure of information is consequential, then I think it's important to spread the good news. I mean, I think you actually, you know, breastfeeding is important immunologically and for at least 6 months, and it's better to do it for a full year. And I mean, that's just a fact we know about pediatrics at this point. And so you know, I guess you don't have to have that conversation with everyone, but it's worth having where you think the information can do some good, or where its absence can do some harm. But yeah, this actually reminds me of a related issue around honesty and child care. One thing my wife and I discovered when we had our first child is, I mean, one, we discovered how hard it was in those first few months, and we discovered that people that we felt we had been misled by the sort of brave social face that everyone had put on those first months of having kids, where everyone would, you know, around us, even close friends, would just basically put a brave face on their suffering and say everything's great, everything's fine, what a miracle it is to have a child, but they were just being, you know, quickly undone by the sleeplessness and the difficulty of having a child, and so everyone gets kind of jumped into this experience of new motherhood and fatherhood, and is surprised by how hard it is. I think everyone could spare everyone else some of that surprise by actually being more candid about how hard it is. And you know, when you cancel plans, you don't pretend that you have some kind of calendar a scheduling clash. You say, listen, I'm just so exhausted from these nights of sleeplessness. I'm just not up for dinner. People rarely cancel plans in that way if it's true, and yet that truth is information that can be useful to people.
One, you also deal here with extreme situations, and you know, hopefully most of us will never find ourselves in such situations, but there are times when, at least theoretically, a lie could be the difference between life or death, not even for oneself, but for another person. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. Well, did you have situations?
You bring up the case study of if you are hiding a child in your house and someone who wants to kill that child comes to your door and says, "Is this person here?"
Yeah, yeah. So the kind of classic Anne Frank moment. Well, the first thing to notice is that we rarely find ourselves in a situation where the truth would obviously get someone harmed or ourselves harmed. But in those situations, I just view it as a lie then becomes sort of the least injurious action on a continuum of violence that is justified by the situation. So if the Nazis show up at the door looking for Anne Frank, there are many things that would be appropriate to do at that moment, including shooting them all in the head on your doorstep if you had the capacity to do it. There are situations where violence is clearly warranted in defense of your life or in defense of the life of another, and lying just becomes another arrow in your quiver at that moment, because it's obviously the least harmful thing you could do to someone to avoid violent conflict. So if you could say, let's say you see two people. You see one person attacking another person on the sidewalk. Well, there are various options open to you. You could physically intervene and perhaps get injured yourself or even killed. Or you could lie. You could say, "Hey, the cops are right around the corner," or "Hey, there are cameras all over this street. You're being recorded right now." Now those are lies. Say you just made it up on the spot. But if that diffuses the violence, well, then I just see that as a self-defense tactic, that really falls under the rubric of the ethics of emergency. I mean, it's not the normal case where you're presuming a real relationship with another person. In this case, you're presuming the absence of relationship. You're presuming that there's nothing you could say to this person that's honest and rational that would modify their behavior. You basically are treating somebody like a wild animal who has to be corralled with, in this case, your words. And that seems fine to do in those situations.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Andrew in Coppell. Hi, Andrew.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
Sam, when you were talking about the two different codes of ethics, one for, like, personal friends and one for, say, business relations, I thought that sounded a lot like Karl Marx's description of social relations and capitalism. Would you agree with that assessment?
You know, I'm actually not familiar with Marx's description there. I mean, I don't know if it resonates with it. But it's not, I mean, one thing I should clarify is it's not that I'm denying that there are different features to a, you know, a business relationship than a friendship. And obviously, you have to be concerned about making a profit as a business person and when you're dealing with customers. But there's nothing intrinsically deceptive about that. Now, I mean, Karl Marx probably felt that there was something morally corrosive about the kinds of commercial relationships that get set up between individuals under capitalism. But whether or not there is anything corrosive about a profit motive or capitalism per se, there's nothing necessarily deceptive about it. I mean, when I walk into a store, I know that the goods have been marked up beyond the price of their manufacturer by the store owner, because that's the only way the store owner can possibly stay in business. And so there's nothing deceptive about that. And he knows I want to pay less than the least amount he'll accept. And I mean, it's a game that's being played in full view of both participants. The difference is when you actually mislead people in a way that is unethical, or that, you know, where that you recognize you are denying them information that you would want to have if you were in their shoes, and that's where I think you run into a problem, and it becomes very obvious when it's something you would never do to a friend, but you're doing happily or thoughtlessly to a stranger.
Has it been your experience that people who lie easily and guiltlessly are also less willing and able to trust other people?
Yeah, well, actually, the research bears that out. There is a kind of parity, or it does have the structure of kind of two sides of the same coin, where if you are someone who tends to lie to others, you also tend to assume that others are lying to you. I mean, this is just the way human beings operate, in your view. Conversely, I don't know if there's any research on this, but just speaking personally, I'm always surprised to discover that people are lying. I mean, I basically view the world as, I know in the abstract that there's a lot of lying going on, and I constantly see the evidence of it. But in relationships with people, I am not a person who assumes that other people are likely to deceive me. I wouldn't call it naivete, but there's kind of a pure perception of people, which is occasionally disconfirmed by the evidence of their lies. I kind of assume that people are honest, and I don't know if that's a natural consequence of being committed to being honest myself or not, but it does sort of mirror the other finding.
Well, it certainly seems like it would lead to a more pleasant existence if you feel you can trust most of the people you encounter.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality is otherwise. I think you do have to be aware of the fact that just people lie all the time. I mean, very few people can get through a day without telling several lies, and many of these lies are significant, and it's just something we're doing. I wrote the book because I think it really is so costly, both interpersonally and societally. Just that the cost to society of a few big lies is just huge. Whenever the government is caught lying on matters of consequence, or whenever a corporation is caught lying to conceal a fraud or to conceal a liability, where something they've done has cost people's lives. I mean, then you get a whole generation of people who think you can't trust the government, you can't trust, you know, the pharmaceutical industry or the car industry or the media or anything, or any of these sources of presumably valid information that have been caught misleading people about that information.
Let's go next on the phone to Linda in Washington State. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
My parents had a saying that they used to teach us about lying, and it was, always tell the truth, but don't always be telling it.
Yeah, nice.
I guess that's a good way to make sure you're not necessarily over-divulging what you don't want
or need people to know around
yeah,
you?
Yeah, well, you also just don't want to be boorish. I mean, you don't want to be someone who is constantly broadcasting unpleasant opinions. So, you know, you don't have to give someone's opinion of their work unless they ask you for it. You know, that there's, and if they ask, then you can find tactful ways to give them the truth, and you can find unpleasant ways to give them the truth. And if you're committed to other people's well-being, and you're committed to them getting something useful out of the conversation, well, then you're gonna want to try to convey that in a way that fosters connection rather than disconnection, and that's just something that emotionally and socially people, it's a role that people grow into to one or another degree, and some people are better at it than others, but it's like anything else in life.
Interesting question here from Alejandra, who says, please comment on how to deal with the process of applying for jobs or grad school in a system where being completely truthful could put you at a disadvantage. And I guess his assumption is that a lot of other people are not completely truthful, and if one is, one comes off looking worse rather than better.
Yeah. Well, this is a question that came up in the book. When I originally released this as an e-book, I asked my readers to send in questions and criticism and comments, and then I subtly adjusted the main essay in the book, and then added an appendix with Q&A with readers, and this is one of the questions where someone said, listen, you know, in a job market like this, everyone is padding their resume. If I'm scrupulously honest about my backstory with employers, I'm at a disadvantage with basically everyone else in the job market. And so, you know, that may be true. So what you have here is a culture that has been poisoned by lies. I mean, you have a system which is obviously dysfunctional. If you have an arms race of dishonesty where everyone is lying about their qualifications to employers, you've got a problem, which presumably employers are going to have to solve if they keep noticing that they're suffering bad hires, or people claim to know things or have expertise that they don't in fact have. And it is analogous to a, depending on what the situation is, it's analogous to the self-defense situation. I mean, if you've been looking for a job and have been unable to find one, and you and your family are going to starve, well, then it becomes a kind of emergency, and you know, I can't tell you not to shade the truth so as to finally get the job that you couldn't otherwise get. But this is a society-wide problem. If in fact this is the case, this is a society-wide problem that we should all want to correct. I mean, this is just not a good thing, and it is a kind of moral emergency.
The new book by Sam Harris is called Lying. Sam, it's been wonderful to have you on the show, and I mean that sincerely. Thank you very much for joining us.
Likewise. Thanks, Chris.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think and email the show at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.